Well done, Fletcher. You can do it on almost every try. You'll be better than some of the second years by now,
Silver encouraged.
I don't care about where I come in the tournament, Fletcher moaned. I only care about beating Isadora and Tarquin. They can flash up a shield in a few seconds, and theirs are twice as thick as mine. It's the same with all the attack spells as well. Consistency, speed, and power, that's what Arcturus said matters. They beat me at all three.
Silver gave him a sympathetic smile and squeezed his shoulder.
If you come up against them, they will need to use more mana to beat you, which gives us a better chance. Seraph, Othello, and I have caught up with them after all this training. We would never have been able to do that without your help, especially the sword practice. Even Malik says that you're a good swordsman, and the Saladins are reputed to be the best fencers in the land.
Fletcher gave her a weak smile and went to sit beside Seraph. It was almost midnight, but Othello had asked them to wait for him in the arena. He had disappeared just a few hours before on mysterious business in Corsinum. The past few months had been grueling, filled with constant practice and study. Their demonology exam had come and gone, which all of them had passed with flying colors. Fletcher wasn't sure what had hurt his wrist more, the incessant sword training or the endless hours of scribbling essays during their day-long exams. He could have borne the past few months with relative ease, were it not for the coldness that he, Silver, Seraph, and Othello had received from their former friends. Despite their attempts to make peace with them, Rory, Genevieve, and Atlas were still upset, eating separately at breakfasts and avoiding them wherever possible.
Ah, they're still here!
Othello's voice came from behind them.
We have company, everyone! Step lively now, and welcome some old friends!
Fletcher turned to see Othello, Atoll, and Attila standing behind them. He leaped to his feet and was immediately wrapped in a bear hug, Atoll's strong arms picking him up as if he were no heavier than a child.
I thought Othello said he was going to pick up my order tomorrow, Fletcher laughed.
Attila smiled awkwardly from a few feet away and gave him a respectful nod.
True friends of the dwarves get personal delivery, Atoll boomed, releasing him. Attila has been working day and night on your request. Now that his leg has healed, he thought you would come along as well.
Aye, it was delicate work, but a joy to make,
Attila said, holding his handiwork up to the light. Fletcher had first thought of it after his talk with Arcturus. The scrying stone he'd been given was only useful when Fletcher held it close to his eye. Arcturus's eye patch had given him the idea of fixing it in place there, leaving his hands free.
I realized your idea for a monocle wouldn't work as soon as I started, Fletcher. It would become dislodged if you ever had to fight whilst wearing it. But you said your idea came from a teacher's eye patch. So I filed your crystal down until it was transparent, mounted it in silver, and attached a strap to it instead. Try it for yourself.
The leather strap of the eyeglass fitted snugly around Fletcher's head, with the scrying stone sitting just in front of his left eye. He could see through it almost perfectly, although the left side of his vision now had a slight purple tinge.
It's perfect! Thank you so much!
Fletcher cried, marveling at the clarity. If he were to scry, he would literally be able to see things from Ignatius's point of view, at the same time being free to act as he chose.
Can I get one of those?
Seraph asked with a hint of jealousy.
I would never have thought of that.
Too late now, Attila replied, pulling his beard at the compliment. But if you have the coin and the crystal, I would be happy to start right away.
I need my stone for tomorrow, but I may take you up on that soon.
Seraph pulled out his own shard of crystal and looked at it with disappointment.
Very impressive,
Silver said, yawning as she walked up the stairs.
But the tournament is in the morning, and I need a good night's sleep. Are you coming, Seraph?
Yeah, I need my beauty sleep if I'm going to win Isadora's heart tomorrow,
Seraph choked, giving Fletcher a parting wink as he followed her.
Good night, all.
After their footsteps had faded down the corridor, Atoll cleared his throat and gave Othello an apprehensive look.
Right. There is one more item of business to discuss, Othello. Attila has a new tattoo to cover the scar on his leg. I know you hate doing this, but I brought the tattooing kit in case you want the same. After the failed attack, the Pinkertons are more aggressive than ever.
Othello groaned as Atoll pulled out several thick needles and a pot of black ink from his pack.
No, not this time. I have come to realize that taking the blame for Attila has only served to make him live a life without consequences. If anything, his near-death experience probably taught him more life lessons in one night than he has had in his entire 15 years of existence. Is that not so, Attila?
Othello observed, nodding pointedly at Fletcher.
I was wrong about humans, Attila mumbled, looking at his feet. But that does not change the many atrocities we have suffered at their hands. I have realized it is not their race that I hate, but the system that we live in.
And if we are to change that system, we must do so from within.
Othello gripped Attila by the shoulder.
Will you enlist in Vokans next year? I cannot do this alone, brother.
Attila looked up, his eyes burning with determination.
I will.
Othello laughed with joy and slapped Attila on the back.
Excellent! Let me show you my room! Can your leg manage the stairs?
The twins left arm in arm, Othello helping Attila limp up past the steps and out of the arena. Their cheerful voices echoed down the corridor, leaving Fletcher alone with Atoll.
How things change, Fletcher murmured.
Aye. It does my heart good to see them back as friends, Atoll said, wiping a tear from his eye. They were inseparable as youngsters, always getting into mischief.
Attila's heart is in the right place, Fletcher said, thinking of his own hate for the Forsyths. I do not know if I would be so forgiving.
It is not in a dwarf's nature to forgive, Atoll sighed,
sitting down and lifting one of the tattooing needles to the light.
We can be as stubborn as mules, myself included.
Not Othello, though.
I remember back when Othello volunteered to be tested by the Inquisition, and I told him that he was joining the enemy.
Do you know what he replied?
No. What did he say? Fletcher asked.
He said that a warrior's greatest enemy can also be his greatest teacher. That young dwarf has wisdom beyond his years.
Fletcher contemplated those words, once again feeling a deep admiration for Othello. Dame Fairhaven had said something similar.
Know thy enemy. But what could he learn from the Forsyths or Didrik?
Perhaps if he had access to James Baker's book, he could learn something from the Orcs. Annoyingly, it was yet to return from the printers, who were having trouble carving wooden presses for the intricate diagrams that adorned each page. Though it mostly concerned the anatomy of demons that lived in the orc side of the ether, it was impossible to know what other useful observations Baker had inscribed in those pages.
You don't want a tattoo, do you? I did Othello and Attila's, so I know what I'm doing,
Atoll half-joked.
No, it's not my style, Fletcher said, laughing. No offense, but I think they look quite brutish. I've even seen an orc.
He froze. In his mind's eye, he saw the white orc raising his hand, the pentacle flashing violet on his palm. Could it really be that simple?
You saw an orc with tattoos? Atoll said slowly,
confused by Fletcher's abrupt silence.
It was a dream, Fletcher murmured,
tracing his finger over the palm of his left hand. Fletcher drew his kopesh and began to sketch the outline of a hand in the arena's sand. His heart beat madly in his chest at the thought of what he was about to do.
I hope you're as good as you say you are, Atoll, Fletcher pronounced. I need this tattoo to be perfect.
48. It was blazing hot in the arena, made more so by the dozens of torches that Sekulda had ensconced in the walls. The sand the novitiate stood on seemed to stir and shift in the flickering light.
Are there really only 24 of us? I thought there would be more,
Seraph whispered in Fletcher's ear.
No, that's it. 12 first years and 12 second years, with an equal number of commoners and nobles,
Fletcher replied in a terse voice. He did not feel like talking. Each beat of his heart made his left hand throb with pain. It had not been a pleasant experience with Atoll the night before, and he had not been able to test his theory yet. The dwarf had told him to let his hand heal as much as possible before he tried anything.
Eyes front!
Sekulda barked from behind them, making the students jump.
Show your respect for Hominum's generals!
Fletcher stood a little straighter as the corridor into the arena darkened. First came the generals, resplendent in smart uniforms of blue velvet, edged with gold thread that ran from their sleeves up to their epaulettes. Their chests were adorned with a plethora of medals and tassels, and they clutched their bicorn hats tightly to their sides as they walked stiff-legged down the steps. These were hard men, with faces that spoke of weary experience. They did not speak, but instead raked their eyes over the cadets as if they were horses at auction.
If they're impressed, they commission us directly after the tournament to fight in the king's army,
Seraph murmured out of the corner of his mouth.
The pay's not as good, but they promote faster than the noble battalions do because of the higher attrition rate. Filling dead men's shoes and all that.
Silence in the ranks,
Sekulda snapped, limping to the front and daring them to break silence.
Stand to attention. If I see you move an inch, I'll make you wish you hadn't.
But Fletcher was not listening. A man had ducked into the arena and was staring at him. The family resemblance was unmistakable. Zacharias Forsyth. Zacharias was not as Fletcher had imagined. He had pictured a man with cold, serpentine features. Instead, Zacharias was tall and brawny, with half his ear missing and a confident grin. He flicked his eyes away from Fletcher and onto his children, who were standing side by side.
Come now, Sekulda, let the cadets relax. There will be plenty of time for all that ceremony later,
Zacharias said in a deep, cheerful voice. He stepped onto the sand and embraced his two children, mussing up Tarquin's hair and giving Isadora a kiss on the cheek. For some reason, it confused Fletcher to see this. It seemed strange to think that anyone could adore Tarquin and Isadora, even if he was their father.
And who's this strapping young lad?
Zacharias boomed, stepping in front of Fletcher and looking him up and down, noting his shaggy black hair and the kopesh at Fletcher's side.
It's the bastard, father, the one with the salamander demon,
Tarquin drawled, looking at Fletcher with disdain.
Indeed,
Zacharias said, staring deeply into Fletcher's eyes. The smile remained fixed on Zacharias's face, but Fletcher saw something stir behind the man's eyes. Something dark and ugly that made him want to shudder.
It will be interesting to see what your demon can do. Why, I bet it could burn a man's shoulder to the bone, if it were so inclined.
The smiling mask remained, but Fletcher would not let himself be intimidated by the brute of a man.
It can, and it has,
Fletcher replied, setting his jaw.
Perhaps I could give you a demonstration sometime.
Zacharias's smile wavered, then he laid a hand on Fletcher's shoulder and pointed at the arena steps, which were filling with more nobles, all in varying uniforms and colors, representative of their personal battalions. Others had joined Zacharias on the sand, hugging their children and talking loudly, much to Sekulda's annoyance.
It will be nice for you to have your family here to support you. Why don't you wave hello to your father?
Fletcher froze.
Was Burden here?
It couldn't be.
But no. Zacharias was pointing to a grey-haired man and woman who were staring at Fletcher with a look of pure hatred.
I took the liberty of informing the Favershams about your claims, Zacharias said, his eyes filled with malice. Even the king has taken a special interest in your case. After all, you have accused Lord Faversham of being unfaithful to the king's cousin once again. So many years after all the troubles with Arcturus and the other bastards.
I claimed no such thing, Fletcher fumed. I would never.
I invited them to join me and see you for themselves. I hope you don't mind. Arcturus has been sent away so he doesn't run into his father and stepmother, part of the terms of his agreement with the old king. That leaves Rook in charge of the tournament. An old family friend, don't you know? I'm sure he will take great pains to make sure everything is as fair as possible.
Zacharias winked at Fletcher, then left the pit to take a seat with the other nobles, but not before flashing a shark-like grin at Silver and Othello. Fletcher shook with rage, balling his hands into fists, despite the pain that throbbed through his left hand.
Don't let him faze you, Fletcher, Seraph whispered. We're going to wipe the floor with the Forsyths.
Sit down, everyone,
Scipio bellowed, ducking out of the corridor and walking down the steps of the arena, followed by a smirking Rook. He nodded and waved to generals and nobles alike. As the spectators took their seats, a hush fell on the arena.
So, another year, another fresh crop of cadets, ready to test their mettle in the arena, Scipio said, throwing his arms wide and beaming at the students. This year is a rather unusual affair. Traditionally, there would only be a dozen or so candidates, with duels by knockout to determine a winner. But this year, we have extended the opportunity to both first and second years, leaving us with 24 candidates to sort through. I will leave you in the capable hands of Inquisitor Rook to explain the new rules of the tournament for you all.
Scipio stepped away and took a seat at the very front of the arena steps, his job done.
Thank you, Provost. I would like to take this opportunity to thank you all for coming. I know your time is precious. Every minute away from the front lines is a minute your soldiers are without your fine leadership. To speed things up, I have decided that there shall be a three-way battle in the first round, where only one candidate will proceed to the next. It will not be a traditional duel, but more shall be revealed later.
There were murmurs of curiosity from the watching crowd, but there was no disagreement. Rook allowed the noise to die down, then continued.
The following round will be the traditional knockout between two cadets, but with no spells or demons allowed. Historically, the combatants in the tournament rarely come to blows, preferring to hurl spells at each other or let their demons do the fighting for them. It seems a shame to waste the years of sword training your children have had, even before coming to the academy. The second round will showcase this important skill.
This time there were nods of agreement from the nobles in the stands, but the general seemed less happy with the arrangement, pursing their lips and shaking their heads at each other.
I must object. This gives an unfair advantage to the noble children, who will have all had private tuition in sword play,
one of the generals said, addressing Scipio directly.
We would prefer a fair assessment of the cadets' abilities. Perhaps you would prefer us to handicap the nobles, simply because they are better prepared?
Rook replied with a hint of sarcasm.
Have they not also had some training in spellcraft before arriving at the Citadel too? Maybe we should limit the tests to the demonology exam.
Scipio stood and turned to the general who had spoken.
I'm afraid I must agree with Inquisitor Rook. I too took issue with this change at first, but I soon remembered one thing. War is unfair. The weak fail, and the strong survive. If the tournament is unbalanced, does it not provide a more accurate representation of true battle?
I have also put a measure in place that will allow an equal number of nobles and commoners to make it to the second round, Rook announced.
Commoners and nobles will not compete with each other in the three-way battle, as the groups will not be mixed. Does that satisfy you?
It does, Inquisitor.
Thank you. The general took his seat once again, although his brow remained furrowed.
Good. Rounds 3 and 4 shall be traditional duels, so I assume there will be no disagreement there. Now, the arena must be prepared for the first round,
Rook said, rubbing his hands together.
Sekulda, take the cadets to their cells.
49. Fletcher sat in the darkness of the prison cell, his heart fluttering beneath his ribcage like a caged bird. He had hoped that he would be able to watch the tournament, but the rules stated that all combatants were to be kept separate. It felt like hours had passed, and the anticipation was torture. He stared at his hand, tracing the deep black lines that Atoll had drawn. In the center of his palm lay a pentacle, the five-pointed star within a circle. If this worked as he had planned, he would be able to summon and infuse Ignatius simply by pointing his hand, rather than positioning the demon above a summoning lever. He wasn't too sure how much that would help him in a battle, though. He had left his index finger blank so that he would be able to etch with it as normal, in case he needed to use another spell. The other fingertips had been tattooed with the 4 battle symbols of telekinesis, fire, lightning, and shield. With any luck, he could shoot mana through each finger without ever having to etch a symbol in the air. A sudden buzz startled him, and Valens hovered into view, gliding through the cage bars and settling on his lap.
"Come to watch, Captain Lovett?" Fletcher asked, stroking the beetle's smooth shell.
Valens waggled his antennae and buzzed cheerfully. Somehow, it made Fletcher feel better.
"I hope you do watch. It will be nice to have someone cheering for me. Or buzzing."
Footsteps rang out in the corridor, and the beetle shot away, secreting himself in a dark corner of the room.
"Fletcher!"
It was Sekulda, staring at him through the bars of his cell.
"You're up."
Fletcher stood on a wooden platform on the edge of the arena, with his back to the spectators. A large summoning lever was spread in front of him. Both Rory and a second-year commoner named Amber stood on their own platforms, at equal distances on either side of him. He could feel the Faversham's eyes on him, prickling the hairs on the back of his neck. Rory's gaze was also laden with malice, as if their return to the arena had reminded him of Fletcher's apparent betrayal. With a shake of his head, Fletcher forced himself to ignore them and turn back to the task at hand. The battleground had been filled with large, jagged rocks, as if an enormous red boulder had been shattered and scattered across the sand. In the very center, a giant clay pillar stood, at around 30 feet high. A spiral pathway from the base to the top was wrapped around it like a snake, wide enough to accommodate a horse. He heard an almost imperceptible hum above his head and looked up. Valens had just flown by, circling around the arena before settling on the concave ceiling, blending into its shadows. Fletcher smiled. Lovett had the best view in the house.
"The rules of this challenge are simple," Rook declared from the sidelines. "The first demon to reach the top of the pillar and remain there for 10 seconds will win. You will only use the telekinesis spell. You cannot attack your fellow cadets. You cannot leave your platform. If you do, it means instant elimination. Begin."
Fletcher dropped to his knees and laid his hand on the lever, summoning Ignatius with a blast of mana. He swiped the demon's back with his scrying stone. The imp gave a chirrup of excitement
and then leaped into the arena without a moment's hesitation. Across from him, Amber had summoned a shrike, and Malachi was already zipping towards the pillar. Rook had chosen Fletcher's opponents well. Flying demons, one small and hard to target, the other large but hard to knock down. This was not going to be easy. Fletcher lifted his hand and pointed at Malachi with a tattooed finger.
"I hope this works," he whispered to himself, flooding his body with mana.
The air shivered in a long, thin streak, then Malachi was knocked out of the air, tumbling into the rocks below.
It had worked! "Go, Ignatius! Now!"
The salamander galloped through the rocks, cutting this way and that, as Rory and Amber fired at him frantically. The sand erupted around Ignatius. Rocks shattered, sending razor-sharp shards exploding like shrapnel. As the demon took a flying leap for the pathway, a kinetic blast from Rory hit him hard and sent him tumbling behind a rocky outcrop near the pillar's base. Fletcher felt a dull throb of pain, but knew that Ignatius was not too badly injured. The shrike had already hopped to the ground, preferring to hide in the rocks than be knocked out of the sky. Fletcher took the opportunity to put on his eyeglass before Malachi made another break for it. He could see Ignatius was hidden beneath a concave rock, and that the pathway was not too far away. But if the salamander were to run up the pathway, he would be too exposed to make it very far. Even if he made it to the top, it was unlikely he would be able to stay there for long enough.
"We need to hunt down the other demons. Take them out before they get a chance to fly up there,"
Fletcher murmured, sending his intentions to Ignatius. The salamander growled in agreement, then darted to the next rock, searching from below, whilst Fletcher watched from above. Rory and Amber were also peering at their scrying stones, their eyes switching back and forth between the crystal and the sand like an angry cat's tail. Fletcher grinned, amazed at how well the eyeglass was working. He could still see with both eyes, with a ghostly purple-tinged image overlaying his view on the left side of his vision. Ignatius froze. The shrike was ahead of him, crouched silently under the overhang of a large rock. It was a small shrike, around the size of an overgrown eagle, but powerfully built, with shining plumage and fierce talons. Ignatius could take him.
"Flame!"
Fletcher breathed, feeling the mana roil in his veins. The shrike was caught in a whirlwind of fire, crashing against the face of a rock. It cawed and fluttered its wings, but Fletcher blasted it back to the ground before it made it a few feet into the air.
"That's one cooked turkey!"
Scipio shouted, as the spectators cheered and booed. Ignatius leaped onto the smoking shrike, clawing at it in frenzy and stabbing with his tail like a scorpion. The shrike raked back with a talon, gouging Ignatius's side. Ignatius screeched with pain, then reared back, ready to blast the shrike with flame.
"No!"
Amber yelled, leaping from the platform. Ignatius paused, startled by the noise.
"Don't hurt him! Don't hurt him!"
she cried, throwing herself over the shrike's head.
"That's enough, Ignatius! They're out of the tournament!"
Fletcher shouted. But Fletcher was not the only one shouting. The crowd behind were roaring, and Fletcher saw that Malachi was on the top of the pillar, peeking over the far ledge. Ignatius was already racing towards the pillar, but he wasn't going to make it in time. Fletcher fired a shot, but all it did was knock dust from the top of the pillar. The angle wasn't right. It would be a miracle if he even managed to graze Malachi.
10, 9, 8.
Rook shouted. Fletcher needed to do something drastic. He let the next ball of kinetic energy grow to the size of a grapefruit, gritting his teeth as he pumped it full of mana.
7, 6, 5,
Rook continued, barely disguising his glee. Fletcher howled, holding the expanding ball over his head. He could feel the air above him distorting and shaking. He hesitated, his eyes fixed on Malachi's fragile frame.
4, 3, 2.
The pace had quickened now. Rook knew what he was about to do. Fletcher hurled the ball across the arena with all his might.
The pillar's top shattered like porcelain, blasting Malachi away in a roaring maelstrom of dust and splinters of stone.
No!
Rory yelled, jumping down and kneeling in the sand. He scooped up the broken body of Malachi from where it lay. The mite twitched and shuddered, his six legs spasming in the air. Rory sobbed, desperately trying to etch a healing spell in the air.
Dame Fairhaven will take care of him,
Scipio announced, as the crowd began to murmur with sympathy. Dame Fairhaven rushed over and kneeled beside Rory. She etched the heart symbol in the air and began streaming white light over the stricken demon.
You're a monster, Rory shouted at Fletcher. He's dying!
Fletcher felt his stomach lurch as he saw a patch of dark blood where the mite had landed in the sand.
Come on, Sekulda said, gripping him by the arm. There's nothing you can do for him now.
Let me go,
Fletcher shouted, as Sekulda dragged him away.
Malachi!
50. This time, Fletcher was left in a larger cell. It was just as dark and miserable, but he was surprised to find Othello and Silver in the barred cells on either side. Ignatius chirruped with joy when he set sight on them.
You made it!
Silver cried, jumping up and grinning at him.
Rory almost beat me to it. It was as if that challenge was designed for mites.
Fletcher stared at the ground. He still felt guilty, and his mind lingered on Rory and Malachi. The image of the blood-stained sand flashed in his mind, and he felt a wave of nausea rush through him.
It was designed for mites. Don't you see what Rook did?
Othello growled, clutching the bars between them.
He wanted to knock out all the powerful commoners early, by making it easier for the weak ones to beat us. If his plan had worked, the nobles would be fighting Rory, Genevieve, and some of the second-year commoners with mites in the next round. He didn't separate the commoners and nobles in the first round to be fair. He did it to make it unfair on us. Well, it's a good thing he underestimated us,
Silver replied, a look of grim determination on her face.
I hope Seraph makes it. I saw that he was up against Atlas and a second year when they walked past my cell. More like, let's hope Tarquin and Isadora don't make it. With Rook deciding who they fight against, somehow I doubt it,
Othello muttered darkly.
So what's next?
Fletcher asked, watching Ignatius lick the wound in his side, and wondering whether he should attempt the healing spell.
He said something about a sword fight. Atoll did me the favor of sharpening my blade last night. But what are we going to do? Slice at each other until one gives up? No, I asked Scipio about that last week,
Othello explained.
The barrier spell protects the skin from being cut. It's like a very flexible shield that sheaths around your body. It will still hurt like hell, but it blunts the cut, as if a bar of metal is hitting you. Once Rook judges that you have struck a killing or maiming blow, you win. Rook again. Well, at least he can't be too unfair with everyone watching,
Fletcher grumbled, scratching Ignatius under the chin.
Hang on, I've never heard of this spell. Why haven't we learned how to use it? I know orcs tend to use blunt weapons anyway, but surely it's a game-changer,
Silva exclaimed.
Because you need at least four powerful summoners to provide a strong enough barrier,
Othello explained.
Some of the nobility will have to merge their mana and provide a constant stream to you throughout the battle. Other than in a tournament, the spell is almost never used. Except for when the king is on the battlefield, of course.
I see. Well, let's hope it works. I don't fancy getting my head cut off tonight, Fletcher said, beckoning Ignatius to jump onto his lap.
Here, let me heal Ignatius,
Silver murmured, noticing Fletcher's mood.
Don't. You need all your mana to beat the Forsythes in rounds 3 and 4.
He'll be all right, Fletcher said, wishing he could perform one himself. Unfortunately, the healing spell glyph
was usually very unstable, and Fletcher was a long way from mastering it.
"Let me have a look at it,"
Fletcher said, lifting Ignatius closer to his face. The scratch was shallow, far shallower than Fletcher had expected. In fact, the scratch seemed to be shrinking before his very eyes. He sat and watched with growing amazement as the cut gradually began to seal itself.
"Bloody hell," Fletcher murmured. "You are full of surprises."
Ignatius purred as Fletcher traced the fresh skin with his finger.
"Someone's coming,"
Othello said, shrinking back into his cell. Sekulda came into view, leading a happy-looking seraph behind him.
"I still don't understand why they keep you in these cells like goddamn criminals,"
Sekulda grumbled, unlocking the cell opposite Fletcher for Seraph.
"The least I can do is give you all some company."
"Do you know who's fighting next?"
Fletcher asked.
"Aye. It looks like none of the second years have made it to the next round. The pairs are Seraph and Tarquin, Silva and Isadora, Othello and Rufus, Fletcher and Malik. You're going to be hard-pressed to win, all of ye. Especially you, Fletcher. You're the first to fight, and Malik was trained by his father. I'll come and get you in a bit. They're just organizing volunteers for Malik's barrier spell."
He limped off, still grumbling, the clack of his peg leg echoing down the corridor.
"I'll tell you what. If we hate these cells, imagine how those prissy nobles feel,"
Seraph said cheerfully.
"I take it you won then?"
Fletcher asked.
"Of course. Sliver took out Barbarus with a few poison spikes from his back. Atlas was not happy. The second year's might just hid under a rock until it was all over. Whoever was in that last battle really did a number on that pillar. Half the thing was blown off by the time I got to it, not to mention the state of Rory's might. Scared the hell out of that second year, that's for sure."
"Is Rory okay?" Fletcher asked, feeling another pang of guilt.
"He looked pretty miserable. Malachi was still being treated last I saw him. The losers get to sit with the rest of the spectators, so you'll see for yourself in a bit. We'll have a bit of an audience for the next round, that's for sure,"
Seraph said, still grinning.
"You and Silva need to beat Isadora and Tarquin. That's what we're here for. That's why I almost killed Malachi. Get your game face on,"
Fletcher snapped, rounding on Seraph.
"I'm sorry," Seraph said. "I didn't mean..."
The echo of Sekulda's footsteps returned, sending them all into nervous silence.
"Come on, Fletcher. You're first up,"
Sekulda said in a gruff voice. He unlocked the cell, and with one last look at the others, Fletcher followed.
"Remember what I told you, Fletcher. This isn't a race. This isn't emotional. Your career is war, and this is just business. Malik knows you are impatient, that your emotions can get the better of you. Good. Let him think that's how you're going to behave. Use it."
With those parting words, Sekulda pushed him into the arena.
"Ah, Fletcher, can I say we were all very impressed with your performance in that last battle? It surprised us all."
Scipio placed his hand on Fletcher's back and propelled him onto the rock-strewn arena.
"Unusually fast etching. I didn't see your finger move at all. As for your salamander, what a show. I'm sure a first lieutenancy is on the cards if one of the generals sees the same potential I do."
Fletcher barely heard his words, instead staring at Rory's tear-streaked face as he held Malachi to his chest. The demon was flapping his wings weakly, but he appeared to be alive. Relief flooded through Fletcher like a drug.
"Rory, is he okay?"
Fletcher yelled from across the arena.
"No thanks to you,"
Rory yelled back. The pain in his voice was obvious, but there was no real anger there, only the remnants of fear.
"I'm sorry, Rory,"
Fletcher implored, but Rory turned away, fussing over his injured demon. Despite this, Fletcher felt a lot better. Malachi was going to be fine, and that was what mattered. Rory would come around. It was only when he saw Malik, scimitar in hand, that he came crashing back down to reality.
"I need volunteers to produce the barrier spell for Cadet Wolf," Scipio declared to the crowd.
"My pleasure,"
Zacharias Forsyth shouted.
"And I believe that the Favershams are also eager to help. Inquisitor Rook, would you join us?"
Fletcher blanched as the Favershams and Zacharias walked down to the edge of the arena. The couple did not bother hiding the hatred in their eyes. Was Scipio really going to allow them to be responsible for his life? Scipio harumphed and looked at them suspiciously.
"While I do respect your willingness to overlook the complexities you have with Fletcher, Lord and Lady Favershim, I must insist that Rook remain focused on judging the tournament. No, I shall take that responsibility."
"But my lord," Zacharias stuttered, "you are retired, are you not?"
"The king was kind enough to send me a summoning scroll last night."
Scipio flared a weird light into existence before snuffing it out with his fist.
"He feels that I will be needed on the Orc front soon, and that I have been grieving for far too long. I am inclined to agree with him. I must put the death of my first demon, so many years ago now, behind me and move on. My new felid kit is still growing, but I am sure with a powerful summoner such as yourself, we will do just fine. Now, pay us no mind, Fletcher. You will feel a slight tingling on your skin, but that is all. We shall take care of everything else."
The four battle mages joined hands, and Scipio began to sketch a complex glyph in the air.
"Go on, Fletcher," Scipio said. "Malik is waiting."
51. The Kopesh was slippery in Fletcher's palm. He tried not to think of what might happen if Zacharias or the Favershams decided to cut the manor off at the wrong moment. A tragic accident, that is what they would claim.
"Come on, Fletcher, we haven't got all day,"
Rook sneered, walking into the center of the arena.
"There are three more battles to get through this round."
Fletcher ignored him and instructed Ignatius to go and sit on the steps, away from the battle. If the demon interfered, they would be disqualified.
"Begin,"
Rook uttered, giving the contestants an exaggerated bow. Fletcher took a few steps forward, trying to acclimatize to the new landscape. Whereas before they had trained on flat sand, now the place was strewn with jagged rocks and debris from the first round. As Fletcher circled, Malik stood like a statue, watching him. The young noble had chosen his place well, an area surrounded by loose rocks, where an attacker might lose his footing. Fletcher decided he would not allow him to choose their combat ground. Instead, he looked to the tower, with its spiral pathway to the top. He remembered what Othello had said about how the dwarves built their stairs in an anti-clockwise spiral, so that the attacker's sword arm would be encumbered by the pillar when fighting downwards. By that same logic, an attacker would be equally encumbered in a clockwise pathway on their way up. Fletcher darted to the pillar and clambered up onto the pathway. Keeping an eye on Malik, he maneuvered himself around until he stood just below the broken stump that he had blasted just a few minutes before.
"Come at me, if you dare,"
Fletcher shouted, for the benefit of the spectators.
"I will not fight you on the pillar, Fletcher."
Malik's voice was calm and considered.
"Why not come down and meet me in the middle, on neutral ground?"
If patience was supposed to be Fletcher's weakness, he would wait Malik out. He did not give a damn what the generals or nobles thought of him. But Malik did. If they were to stand at this impasse for too long, it would ruin both their reputations in the eyes of their audience. And if it was reputation that Malik cared about, Fletcher would use it to his advantage.
"So, the son of the great Bybers refuses to fight?" Perhaps the apple falls far from the tree in the Saladin family.
Malik bristled at Fletcher's words, taking an angry step forward.
A Saladin will fight any time, anywhere. We have fought from the desert to the trenches, into the deepest jungles of Orkdom itself. I doubt you could say the same of your family. So prove it. Come show me what a Saladin can do,
Fletcher goaded, twirling his kopesh in mock confidence. Malik needed no more provocation. He raised his curved scimitar high and mounted the pathway, taking long, measured strides. Even in his anger, the boy was a natural swordsman. Fletcher hoped that the pillar would give him enough of an advantage. The first blow came whistling around the corner, chopping at his legs. Fletcher caught it in the curve of his kopesh and turned it aside, before cutting at Malik's head. The noble ducked, leaving the blow to crunch into the pillar. Malik stepped further out and came at him head-on, feinting a crooked slice around the pillar at Fletcher's head, then sweeping again for the legs. Fletcher leaped, letting the scimitar whistle under his feet. Landing in a crouch, he punched out and caught Malik on the cheek, knocking the noble back a few paces. They glared at each other, panting. Fletcher had felt the silky smoothness of the barrier in the punch. He ran his palm along his own hand and felt the same. But barely. It was probably only Scipio who was channeling mana correctly to it. He put it to the back of his mind. There was nothing he could do about it now. The scimitar swung back and forth, held lightly in Malik's hand. It was not unlike a kopesh, with a curved blade and sharp point. With a flick, Malik tossed it from his right to his left.
My father taught me to fight left-handed. Did Sir Calder ever teach you that?
Malik snarled. Fletcher ignored him, but a cold sweat trickled down his back. With the scimitar in Malik's left hand, the pillar was no longer a barrier between them. Still, at least Fletcher had the high ground. Malik stabbed at Fletcher's stomach, but Fletcher caught it in the curve and forced it into the ground. They struggled, chest to chest, the wooden pathway creaking under their feet. Fletcher could feel Malik's hot breath on his face as the noble used his height and strength to lever the blade towards Fletcher's crotch. He heaved, but the sword scarcely wavered as it slowly inched upwards. He felt the point scrape along the inside of his thigh. Was that blood he felt trickling down his leg? The blade was just an inch away now. In a few seconds, it would be buried in his flesh. Fletcher saw his life flashing before his eyes, images of Burden, Didrik, Rotherham. His first fight. Rotherham headbutting Yakov, a man twice his size. It clicked. Fletcher looked up to the ceiling, then whipped his head forward, smashing Malik on the bridge of the nose with his forehead. The boy stumbled and then fell, flailing, over the side. Malik bounced off a jagged rock, which hit him squarely in the stomach. He lay in the sand, gasping like a beached fish.
A killing blow! The rock would have impaled him!
Fletcher shouted.
Not in my opinion, Rook replied with a sneer. It doesn't look so sharp to me. See, he's getting up already.
Malik was indeed getting up. He glared up at Fletcher, taking deep, rattling breaths.
Give up! You're injured, and I have the high ground, Fletcher implored.
But Malik would not. Fletcher had pushed him too far, hurt his pride too much. The young noble raised the scimitar with a roar and sliced it into the pillar. It clattered loudly, but Fletcher saw the flecks of clay come spraying off. Malik swung again, this time with greater success. Great chunks of red clay crumbled, and the platform shook under Fletcher's feet.
You give up! Malik shouted.
But there was no time for Fletcher to even reply. With a crack, the pillar began to collapse in on itself, hairline fractures spreading up the column like forked lightning. With seconds to spare, Fletcher leaped from the top, praying for a soft landing. As he rolled into a crouch on the sand, the pillar crashed beside him, sending a maelstrom of ceramic dust into the air. He could see nothing, the red powder coating his lips and tongue.
It was hard to breathe. A shadow went by on his left, then his right. Was it Rook or Malik? Suddenly Malik burst from out of the red haze, screaming in fury. He swung down hard, but Fletcher dodged aside, feeling the blade graze his forearm. Malik disappeared again, blending into the rusty gloom. Fletcher looked at his arm. Blood welled, but it was just a scratch. He knew one thing now. This was for real. The barrier was useless. Just one lapse in concentration, and he was a dead man. He spun around, looking for the shadow once more. A figure moved, just out of sight. He squinted, watching, as the dull figure raised its arm. A rock came flying out of the fog, cracking him on the forehead. Stars burst across his vision, and he was on his back, staring into the billowing dust. Fletcher swam in and out of consciousness, the edges of his vision bruising. It would be so easy to just let it all go. A searing pain flared in the palm of his hand, bringing him back from the abyss of unconsciousness. His head lolled to the side, and he saw Valens biting into his flesh with his mandibles. Fletcher coughed and shook his hand, trying to dislodge him. The beetle gave him one last nip, then shot off into the dust, his job done. Fletcher began to stand, but the kopesh was kicked from his hand, and a foot was pressed down on his throat.
"I'm going to knock you out cold, Fletcher. Nobody disrespects the Saladins."
Malik's voice was faint, as if Fletcher was hearing it from a great distance. He needed help. Ignatius? No, he was too far away. His hand scrabbled for a rock, anything, but all he could feel was sand. Malik raised his sword, his teeth stark white against the red dust that coated his skin. As the dust began to settle, he could see the watching crowd through the haze. Their cries of excitement reached a fever pitch.
"Good night, Fletcher."
Fletcher hurled a handful of sand at Malik's face. The noble screamed and span away, blinded. Fletcher got to his feet unsteadily, then with his last ounce of strength, tackled Malik to the ground. There was a thud as the noble's head slammed against a rock. Then silence. They lay there for a while, the dust settling around them like a warm cloak. It was peaceful, lying in the dirt. He barely felt the hands that lifted him to his feet, or the glass of water that was pressed to his lips. But he did hear the words that Scipio was shouting.
"Fletcher wins!"
52.
"I can't do it, Fletcher. It has to be you,"
Othello implored through the bars of the next cell. The dwarf was determined. Sikulda had just told them they would face each other in the semi-final, and Othello was refusing to fight.
"No, Othello. I used up too much mana in the first round. I won't be able to win,"
Fletcher replied.
"Well, neither will I. Rufus broke my damned leg. I was lucky to beat him at all,"
Othello said, pointing at his heavily splintered shin.
"In the next round, I'm going to tap out and let you go to the final. If it came to a fight between us, you would probably beat me at this point anyway. If I disqualify myself, you don't need to use any mana in round three at all." "Why don't you just get Dame Fairhaven to heal it?"
Fletcher asked.
"The healing spell only works for flesh wounds, remember? If you start messing about with healing bones, they fix crooked. Trust me, I've asked. I want a crack at Tarquin as much as you do, maybe even more so. But I know that I wouldn't stand a chance." "Look, it might not matter anyway,"
Fletcher argued, pointing down the corridor.
"Tarquin may have beaten Seraph, but Silver beat Isadora. Silver and Tarquin are fighting right now to see who goes to the final. If she wins, I'm going to tap out. The dwarves need one of their own to make it as a finalist. It will impress the generals more. I can say I have concussion. That's half true anyway."
He rubbed the cut on his head where the stone had struck. The injury had almost been a blessing in a way. When Scipio saw the broken skin, he immediately realized that there had been foul play. The provost had suggested that Zacharias and the Favershams take a break, and had replaced them with more impartial nobles, who would shield Fletcher properly for the next fight. There was a rumbling noise from Othello's cell. Solomon was groaning in distress. He paced around the cell before stopping to stroke the splint on Othello's leg. Ignatius chirred sympathetically, lapping Fletcher's face with a wet tongue.
"I'll be fine, Ignatius. Tarquin doesn't know about the tattoos. He's going to underestimate us," Fletcher whispered.
Sekulda rapped on the cage bars with his staff, making Fletcher jump.
"Come on, you two. Battle's over."
"Did Silver win?"
Fletcher asked as Sekulda unlocked the cells.
"See for yourself,"
the old soldier said grimly. Dame Fairhaven and Scipio were carrying Silver out on a stretcher. Her arms, legs, and face were black and blue, with a terrible lump on the side of her head. Sariel staggered behind them, her tail between her legs. The canid's fur was matted with blood, and there was a nasty scratch along her side that ran from snout to tail.
"He hit Silver with a kinetic blast,"
Scipio said, glancing at their worried faces.
"She landed badly. We don't know the extent of the damage yet."
"Poor girl. She had to fight both twins, one after the other,"
Dame Fairhaven said, shaking her head.
"She used most of her mana in the first round, and then it took all her physical strength to beat Isadora. So she was exhausted when she went up against Tarquin. She put up a hell of a fight, though. Nobody will go away thinking that the elves are weak,"
Dame Fairhaven said, her voice laced with sympathy.
"With a head injury like this, it's not safe to heal her, especially if her skull is damaged. We're going to let her rest next to Captain Lovett. If she wakes up, we will let you know."
Fletcher clenched his fists, looking at the broken body on the stretcher.
"Let's go."
Fletcher helped the dwarf limp into the arena. He remembered helping Attila the same way, remembered the blood that trickled down his back as he carried him. The tears on Othello's face when he saw they were alive. The Forsythes were the center of it all, like a fat spider in the center of a web of deceit. Fletcher was going to make them pay for what they had done. Othello could barely stand when they finally reached the sand. His face was tinged green, with beads of sweat dotting his forehead. The dwarf was right. He wouldn't last 2 seconds in a battle with Tarquin. Fletcher was their only hope now.
"The rules are simple,"
Rook stated, striding between the two cadets.
"Demons cannot attack summoners since the barrier spell is ineffective against demonic attack. My Minotaur will be helping to keep your demons away from your opponents, in case they get overzealous."
It was then that Fletcher noticed the bull-headed demon lurking behind the fallen pillar. It stood at 7 feet tall, with sharp curved horns and shaggy hair as black as his own. Its cloven hooves left round imprints in the sand as it paced back and forth, as if it couldn't keep its rage in check. Its hands would have been identical to a man's, were it not for the thick black claws that jutted from its fingers. A pair of red-rimmed eyes stared at him balefully. Then the Minotaur turned away, misting the air with a snort of disdain.
"Yes, he is quite the specimen, isn't he?"
Rook noticed Fletcher staring.
"Caliban has a fulfillment level of 11, so he should be able to handle any unruly demons with ease. You have been warned."
The Inquisitor continued on, walking around the arena, his hands clasped behind his back.
"If you step out of the arena, you lose. If your demon is knocked unconscious or leaves the arena, you will lose. If you kill the demon of your opponent, you will be disqualified and also expelled. We do not fight to the death here, and demons are a precious commodity. So warn them to be cautious. They may injure, but not maim. They may hurt, but not kill."
"What about us? Can we kill?"
Tarquin sneered from the sidelines. He was seated on one of the dismantled platforms, stroking one of Trebius's heads.
No, the same rules apply.